The Monkey in the Cove by Allegra Galino. After 5 hours of travel in his old sea-green Buick convertible, Harish, Hari for short, slowed and took an exit off of Northern California's coastal Highway 101 toward McKinleyville. The wind diminished by half, and Marjorie caught the strawberry blonde strands spidering across her face and secured them under her scarf. Regarding the moss-covered crags topped with twisted evergreens, her mind drifted. Will this excursion, their longest so far, transform 8 months of platonic friendship into more? Desire twisted its hot pepper flavor around her sour anxiety. Meeting in her second year at Sacramento State University, their spark had cut across racial and cultural divides. But, whereas singly Hari was accepted by fellow students, he'd been in the area since high school. The sight of the racially diverse pair walking or eating together provoked raised eyebrows and remarks such as, "Coolie," "Mame Sab," and strangely, "The King and I." "Aren't you ashamed? Get a life," Marjorie would hurl at them. Meanwhile, with unflappable posture, Hari would grin inanely at them, a mirror of their idiocy. Though their origins and paths were different, the local culture was foreign to both. Mocking 1967 California increased their mutual admiration. Yet guilt at not elaborating to her Iowan family her growing attachment to her male South Indian friend raised in London lingered. She drew her cardigan around her robust torso. There was a blaze in the sky. Scanning the blue expanse, its edges gnawed by passing trees, Marjorie saw nothing unusual. She thought it must have been a reflection, the windshield. The pothole-ridden road plunged away from the highway, then threaded into a rough-hewn tunnel. Emerging from darkness, the way was cooler, shaded by cliffs. It straggled past trickling green-bearded rocks. A few minutes later, the road ended at a dilapidated parking area walled in by ridges and bordered with a wood fence. Turning off the engine, Hari covered the back of her pink hand with his mahogany one. "We're here," he whispered. A thrill buzzed up her arm. "Yeah," she quizzically answered. Tall and slim, clad in chinos and a white polo shirt, he departed the vehicle, sauntered to her door and opened it, satirically inviting, "Come with me, m'lady." She fluttered her eyelids, and with a Scarlett O'Hara drawl, "Why, thank you kindly," alighted. He thudded the door close behind her. Seagulls kited across the sky, while the Pacific rumbled out of view. 10 yards beyond the fence, a meadow dropped off downhill. "Not much to see," she said in her normal tone. "A little patience, m'lady," he replied, striding along the fence. She was too nervous to maintain the farce. "Shall we bring the picnic?" "In a little while. I want to show you first." "Okay." Patting her empty stomach, she trotted after him. He led her down a dirt trail, parting the knee-high grass. The noon sun beamed, and popcorn clouds skittered eastward across the sky. The reeds along the trail were interspersed with bell-shaped white flowers. She picked one, twiddled it between her fingers. The path brought them to the rim of a hill, overlooking a cove 200 yards across and contained by a stone cliff crowned with towering cedars. At the base of the precipice across the way was jumbled driftwood. Nearest them, the meadow dispersed into a beach dotted with black rocks. Off to the left, the sand dimpled and flowed into a channel which threaded between hunkered rocks and opened to the sea a quarter mile away. Marjorie saw a flash above the trees. Shading her eyes, she looked, but it didn't happen again. The clouds had fled. The sky was a blank sheet of blue. "So, what do you think?" Hari was impatient.
Nice.
"Nice?" he exclaimed, miffed, then continued down the path.
"Well, I mean..."
Regretting her underwhelming response, she trailed him down the final slope and onto the beach. The water breathed a dark rim of moisture on the sand, and its surface mirrored the landscape on the opposite side. Her mind plunged into that mysterious, topsy-turvy world. Nerves and hunger tangoed in her taut guts.
"Okay, not nice," she said. "It's dazzling."
Vindicated.
"Yes, quite," he replied.
"The water is warmer than the ocean. There's less wind, too. Maybe in the summer we could swim here." She shivered in the early April breeze.
"I find it enchanting," he concluded.
"Oh, quite," she affected his accent. He snorted.
"Hadi, take those off," she gestured toward his sunglasses.
He slid the aviators from his aristocratic nose above his seal-toned eyes onto his head. The glasses drew his hair back, exposing his forehead, scalloped hairline, and expressive brows.
"And you must remove that business," he patted the sides of his head.
"My hair's a mess." But to make up for earlier blunder, she slid the daisy-patterned fabric off and looped it around her forearm. She finger-combed her unruly hair.
"See?"
She flinched away and walked along the water. Hands in pockets, he appeared by her side, stating,
"The trogs were right."
She halted. "The trogs?"
With his back to the water, he brushed the scarf, dangling from her wrist. Then his fingertips curved underneath and drew her hand up. His angular visage softened and his eyes were luminous.
White petals exhaled open in her heart.
"You're absolutely not a mess."
"Wild thing," he crooned, kissing her hand.
"You make my heart sing."
His crisp inflection and clear voice thrummed a chord in her. As if in a trance, their arms encircled, drawing their bodies together, tipping her head up with her eyelids battened against the glare, her lips found his, and they stroked a guitar riff upon each other. It shuddered through them, then resolved in a lingering note. Withdrawing, his voice was hoarse.
"Marjorie, for so long I've wanted..."
She completed the thought.
"Me too."
Then, with a hint of the tongue-flipped D in the middle, as he pronounced it, she added,
"Harish."
His name, once so foreign, flowed out. They embraced, swaying out their relief at crossing an invisible barrier. A searing flash appeared beyond his shoulder. Gasping, she pointed at it. As Hadi turned to look, it materialized as an ornately dressed tan monkey leaping across the cove in splits. The force of its approach cleaved the water as a plow parts snow.
"Down!" Hadi pulled Marjorie with him onto the ground.
Long-toed simian feet sank into the sand before them, and a gibbonish voice boomed.
"My lord, my lady, at last I have found you. I, your devotee, am here to do your bidding."
Unlike Marjorie, Hadi hadn't sprawled, but was compact, sitting upon his heels, torso over his thighs, forehead to the sand. He mumbled an unknown language. She began to get up.
"No," Hadi said in a small voice. "Stay down. This is a god."
"A god?" The monkey interjected.
"Please, my lord, my lady, don't bow before your unworthy servant. It shames me beyond measure."
"It's a test," Hari whispered to her.
"Oh, great Hanuman, it is you who must command us. We are but humble subjects." Marjorie was flabbergasted at his formal speech to Wahoo Man.
"Please rise, my beloveds."
A large mace, blossoming with lethal spikes, was surrendered upon the sand, and furry, calloused hands clasped their forearms. With a chesty hoot, the creature hauled them up as if they were kitten light. Hadi tried to lower himself again,
but the monkey grasped his shoulders, preventing him.
"Please, my Lord Rama, urgent matters are brewing. The people depend on you. I would gladly give my life assisting your sacred cause."
Marjorie asked,
"Who are you? Why did you call him that name?"
With a grin filled with long canines, the monkey god retrieved his mace, and like a spasmodic kung fu master, a blend of monkey and man, he attacked invisible foes, then danced with them. The bells around his ankles made a riot of jingles, while tiers of garlands gyrated like hula hoops around his neck. Then he stopped and bowed, so his jeweled crown indented the sand.
"Why, my Lady Sita, I am Hanuman, your disciple. Do you not recognize me? Do you not know your own divine self? I am yours to command."
"Command? What for?"
"It can't be," Hari broke in. "You think we are Rama and Sita?"
"My lord," Hanuman sprang up, took Hari's hand, and kissed every knuckle. "I know you are Rama and Sita. Is this a game? You know how games delight me."
He capered about. Raucous simian laughter and percussive jingles echoed throughout the cove.
Marjorie whispered, "What on earth is happening?"
Hari looked younger than his 20 years.
"He's a Hindu god."
He touched his ever-present mala beads, wound around his wrist.
"I've prayed to him since I was a child, for guidance and how to be an instrument of God's will. He's the powerful devotee of Rama and Sita. Rama is the 7th avatar of Vishnu, god of..."
The monkey hijinks ceased, and Hanuman reverently finished.
"Preserver of the Dharma, destroyer of the chaotic forces which threaten creation."
His blazing, whiteless eyes slid toward Marjorie.
"And my Lady Sita is his consort, equal to him in all ways."
Again the monkey bowed. Their eyes traveled up his buff-toned, furry back, over the green and red silken cloth knotted about his lower body, and his long tail, held in the shape of a question mark. Marjorie strode away, yanking the scarf around her wrist and muttering,
"This is crazy! I must be dreaming!"
Hari fell into step beside her.
"Dreaming about a god? A mythology you have no exposure to? That is touched, indeed," she snapped. "Well, if it's no dream, you called him. Make him go away."
"You don't understand." Another pair of footsteps hissed and sank into the sand behind them. In bipedal mode, Hanuman was their height. A whimsical smile stretched his broad lips over his snout, and his golden eyes were serene. Hari interlaced his fingers between Marjorie's.
"I prayed that he would guide me today when I confessed my love for you, my queen."
She replied in a daze, "My religion doesn't work like that. It's mostly about guilt." Staring at Hari,
"Wait, you called me what?"
She mouthed his words,
"My queen? It's too much."
A woozy wave poured from head to feet, deflating her posture. Grasping her waist, Hari ordered,
"Sita needs nourishment, water. Here."
From his pocket he got the car keys, tossed them to the god, and head gestured up the grassy peak.
"Show your devotion to us, O Hanuman. Food is in the trunk of the car, up the hill."
With a whoop, Hanuman departed on all fours, reminding Marjorie of a circus act.
"I'm not Sita."
"Of course you're not, but that's how he knows us."
Hari reached overhead and gathered up his shirt behind him, wriggled out to spread it, a white flag upon the sand.
"Come."
Tensing, he held his sinewy arm out.
"Sit down."
He aided her to the earth, her yellow dress a fallen buttercup, and plunked down by her side. Rhythmical, tiny bells descended, getting louder. Then Hanuman appeared, carrying over his head, like an enormous umbrella, the Buick. Spitting out the keys in front of Hari, he lowered the car to the sand with a grunt.
"Here is your chariot, my lord."
Marjorie's awareness slipped out from under her.